Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. I've long wanted to do an exclusive segment on the healthcare reform bill, on what it means, what it says to us, what the implications are, and really getting into the fine print. But truthfully, it's very difficult to find people that have actually read it. And then if they've read it, if they don't have constitutional law experience as a context and background for reading it, they're not reading it with the full understanding of what the implications are. So it is my great pleasure to invite Michael Connolly, who has been a practicing constitutional attorney for 27 years, who's now retired but teaches and writes about it. He's a former U.S. Army captain in the military intelligence area, and he has written several books. Riders in the Sky, The Ghosts and Legends of Philmont Scout Ranch in New Mexico, The Mortar Men, Winds of Merit, and Amayeli, A Story of America. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Michael Connolly to It's Rainmaking Time. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Kim. I'm glad to be here.
Let me just say this to you. Before we actually get into the detail of the final bill, I want to say that it's very difficult today to talk about what has just happened because the landscape for dialogue has already been set. If you're for it or against it, if you're Republican or Democrat, if you like or dislike the president or Nancy Pelosi, and therefore, when all that is in the mix, the average person has an inability to hear the fine print. The other problem with looking into this is that it's one thing to have rhetoric and dialogue about it, but 99.999% of the public has not read it and has no clue and are relying on other people to translate. And those people don't have constitutional background and training like you. So with that said, bring us into the detail of what does this final bill do? What does it mean? And what are we all really going to be dealing with, no matter what area of politics we find ourselves in terms of a camp?
Well, basically, I have said from the beginning, since I read the first bill, which was House Bill 3200, and I have read every one that's been introduced since then, and am still going through, I've gone through it once, but I'm still going through the one that's actually been adopted. But like I said from the beginning, I don't think this is really even about health care. This is about control. This is about a transfer of power, a massive transfer of power to the federal government. And it's taking power away from the states and away from the people. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution lays out what Congress can and cannot do. And there's nothing in there about health care. There's nothing that says Congress can take control of health care and take it away from the states or can interfere in my relationship and your relationship with our physicians. But that's what's being done by this bill. It's basically transferring a massive amount of power to the executive branch of government so the President of the United States and the people he appoints can control every aspect of health care in this country. They are going to decide what type of insurance people are going to have. They're going to force people to buy insurance right now from private companies, but eventually the scenario here is to lead to the government pretty much put the private companies out of business, and there'd be nothing but government-run health care. There is nothing in the Constitution, there is nothing in the Commerce Clause of the Constitution that authorizes the Congress of the United States or the President of the United States to tell people in this country, simply by virtue of the fact that we live here, to tell us that we have to go out and buy something. Now, you know, people will say, oh, but what about the automobile insurance, liability insurance? That's a different ballgame. Number one, that's the states that do that. And number two, if you don't own a car, if you don't drive, if you choose not to drive and use public transportation, you don't have to have that insurance. So there is a choice there. And it's also run by the states. The 10th Amendment to the Constitution reserves power to the people and to the states that Congress does not have. Congress is basically has now taken away a lot of the power from the states and from individuals and is going to put it in the hands of the federal government. We are going to be told what type of insurance we have to have. It has to be approved by the government. Some bureaucrat is going to approve it. And if we don't get the insurance, or we don't get the insurance that's approved by the government, we can be fined. Now, they call this a tax, but the reason they're calling it a tax is, number one, they want the IRS to handle it. There are going to be 16,500 agents to handle a collection of this tax. But number two, they're trying to avoid the due process clause of the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution that says that you have to, there has to be due process before you can, your property can be taken. Ultimately, people could even go to jail for not having this insurance. This, to me, is something that is really trampling on the rights of individuals in this country, and it's a very scary scenario. And the bottom line about the bill is that there are 14 new taxes being imposed by the bill. They are going to be collected starting now. For 3 or 4 years, those taxes will be collected, but no benefits are going to be going to anybody. We're going to be paying into the system. There are going to be no benefits. The only thing that's going to happen initially, as far as health care goes, is that Medicare is going to be cut drastically.
Isn't it $40 million that was taken out of Medicare to handle this bill, the payments?
There's a massive amount that was taken, is going to be taken out of Medicare. And so there's going to be rationing of health care, particularly for seniors in this country, because they're going to have to decide what type of treatment you can have. And they're going to be interfering with what you and your doctor want to do. And see, to me, that's another violation of the Constitution, because that's a breach of contract. People have been paying into the Medicare system for years. And they've been paying into the Medicare system on the basis that when they reach age 65, they would receive the benefits for it. Now, all of a sudden, we're being told that, no, it doesn't matter that you pay into the system. It doesn't matter that you have a contract with the government. We're going to breach that contract, and we're going to take away some of your coverage. We're going to reduce what you get through Medicare, and we're going to take away some of your coverage, and there's nothing you can do about it.
The FDA has long interfered in the supplements, herb, and alternative medicine marketplace, which most of the time is never covered by health insurance companies. And so what's going to happen is it's going to create a bifurcation where you're going to have to pay for the traditional, quote, sick care. And if you want alternative or advanced anti-aging brain care, the things that are current today that are accelerating the rate of which somebody becomes healthy or rejuvenated or revitalized, it's not part of that framework at all. The FDA has banned B6. The FDA, the pharmaceutical companies, and the insurance companies are all part of a matrix.
Well, the whole system now is going to be run by bureaucrats. And, you know, I've never been a fan of health insurance companies. I used to fight them on behalf of clients when they would deny coverage and this sort of thing. But taking a system that doesn't work perfectly, that has flaws, and turning it over to the federal government, which is yet to run anything at a profit. I mean, look at, you know, the post office, Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, it's all broke. Everything's broke. So they have never been able to successfully run anything. And now they're going to be telling the doctors and the hospitals how much they can charge, telling them what type of care they can give to individuals. And again, you're talking about supplements and this sort of thing. They're going to be even getting into the position where, for example, they're going to be telling schools what they have to feed the children. And they're going to be banning things in offices and in corporate buildings. They're going to be banning fast food. They're going to be banning drink machines and this sort of thing. They're even, by the way, and this is one thing that's in this bill that's amazing to me, they are even imposing a tax on tanning booths. So,
I saw that, and I didn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I don't understand why.
Well, this is the philosophy of the federal government we have right now. If it moves, tax it. If it doesn't move, tax it anyway. They're looking for everything they can to raise the money. And what's going to happen here? And this is, I've seen surveys that indicate that anywhere from 1/3 to 45% of the physicians currently practicing in this country are now going to be getting out of the practice of medicine. They're either going to be taking early retirement or they're going to just close their practices. They're going to look for something else to do because they don't want this type of interference in their practices from, by the federal government. And so we're going to have a shortage of health care. We're going to have a massive increase in taxes. Insurance premiums are going to go up.
Not down?
People.
Not down? Because some people say, Michael, that the market will take care of itself. Insurance premiums will go down because there's, quote, more users.
No, because most of those users are going to be subsidized by the federal government, the new users. And they're going to, the federal government in this bill, Congress has already imposed new taxes on the insurance companies. Now, these taxes are going to have to be made up by increasing premiums. And then, of course, you have the taxes on the Cadillac plans. In other words, if you and I have a good insurance plan and we want to keep our plan, but it's something that is more expensive and is a top-of-the-line plan, then the government is going to tax us for that. If you have a good insurance plan and you want to keep it, they're going to make you pay more for it. So your premiums are going to go up because they're taxing the insurance company for selling these good plans. So the premiums are not going to be dropping. The premiums are actually going to be going up for most people. A lot of employers are already starting to say they're going to have to pull the plug on some of the people that work for them. They're basically going to have to drop coverage, or if they're forced to continue coverage, they're going to have to start laying off workers so they can cover the ones that are still working for them.
Is this mandatory insurance for companies too?
Well, it's mandatory insurance that certain employers have to provide a insurance or make insurance available to their employees.
How is that possible? Isn't that the individual's responsibility to get it?
Well, again, that's something that the federal government is now taking control of. They're making everything mandatory in this bill. It's mandatory insurance coverage by employers. If they have a certain number of employees, they have to provide some type of insurance through their company. And the employer, unfortunately, if you have insurance through your company and you leave that job and go to another one and you lose that coverage, then the government is going to, you can't just decide that you want to go get coverage somewhere else. You've got to go through the government, the so-called exchange that's been set up for insurance companies, and they're going to tell you exactly what type of insurance you have to have. And they're going to decide if your coverage is good enough or not, and if they don't like the way your coverage is set up, they'll tell you to get it somewhere else or go into some kind of government plan eventually. Everything is going to be mandatory in this bill. They're forcing people to do things that not only they may not want to do, but that aren't in the long run going to be beneficial for them.
What do you say to people who say, look, this works in Canada, this has worked in England, it's not so bad, it's just going to be like that?
Well, first of all, I disagree that it works in those places. A lot of people from Canada come across the border routinely to get health care here because they basically, in Canada and in Great Britain, they have rationing of health care. If you need to see a doctor, you may wait weeks to get in to see one. If you need to see a specialist, you may wait weeks to get in to see a specialist. If the doctor wants to do a surgery on you, it may be months before the surgery can actually be performed. People cannot get the proper treatment they need for cancer. They can't get the proper diagnostic treatment to find out what's wrong with them. For example, if in Great Britain, and I've heard some of the horror stories from over there, people that need to have an MRI done or need to have a some type of test to determine if, for example, they have cancer, it may take them several months for that test to be scheduled because there's such a shortage of doctors and such a shortage of equipment, and the whole healthcare system is government-run, so it's mired in bureaucracy. And so it may take somebody a couple of months to get the test, and by the time the test is done, the cancer is advanced, and it may be too late to do anything about it if they could even get the treatment.
A friend in Canada had to wait 2 to 3 months to get a test that was a diagnostic test. And her condition worsened, and I was trying to figure out, how is that possible? If you've got to get in, why are they waiting 2 to 3 months? But I didn't understand their system.
Well, they...
And some people say their system is great, but that part of the process is frightening.
Right. And that's going to come about in this country, too, because there's going to be a shortage of physicians, there's going to be a shortage of nurses, there's going to be a shortage of diagnostic equipment available, and because that's something else that the government's basically going to be taxing. And so you're looking at a situation where we're going to have rationing of health care. You're going to have to wait in line. You're going to have to, first of all, get government approval.
I don't understand what you mean by that. What do you mean, I have to get government approval? You're not just saying this as part of your disdain for this bill.
Well, you're going to have to get government approval to get insurance to begin with. But then, when you need to get treatment, if the government has set up the insurance the way that, you know, they want to set it up with the tight controls over the type of insurance you have and what can be covered, they are basically going to be telling you that when you go to check in to see your doctor and your doctor decides that he wants you to have a diagnostic test, that's going to have to be approved by some bureaucrat in Washington, not just by the insurance company. It'll actually have to be approved by some bureaucrat in Washington to decide if that falls under the proper coverage of your insurance, because they're going to be regulating and monitoring all of the insurance coverage in this country. And by the way, the government, in order to be able to do this, to set it up for people who are going to get the supplements to help pay for your insurance and to make sure that people are not abusing the system and that you have the right insurance coverage, the government is going to have instant access.
Electronic? Electronic?
Yeah. Probably via a health care card that everybody will eventually have to have. They're going to have a barcode on that, and they're going to be able to swipe that, and the government will have instant access to all of your medical records as well as your financial records. And I'm talking about bank accounts and this sort of thing. So they can check and make sure that you actually are entitled to have the insurance that you have. So this is something else that's very scary, because the right of privacy is going to be gone completely. Privacy is with regard to our medical health records. That's going down the tubes, and now they're going to be able to access our financial records, which to me and a lot of other constitutional attorneys I've talked to is a clear violation of the protections of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution against illegal search and seizure.
Some people say, Michael, that the Constitution is and has always been a living, breathing document. And therefore, it has to be able to stand the test of an evolving society. What do you think about that?
I think that's nonsense. That was not the way the Constitution was designed. The Constitution was designed not to grant rights to the people. It was designed to limit what the federal government could do. It was designed to establish a government and place severe limits on what that government could do and make sure that the people's rights, which are inherent, they're not given to us by the government. They come to us through God, and they come to us through the fact that we are living, breathing individuals. The Constitution was designed to make sure the government didn't trample on those rights. That's why Article 1, Section 8 specifically says what Congress can do. Now, the framers of the Constitution understood that the country would change. The country was going to get larger. The country was going to evolve. There were going to be changes, and these changes would continue as long as the Constitution was in effect. So they put in the provisions to amend the Constitution. And after the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, there have been a number of other amendments adopted over the years. It's not an easy process, but it's been done. And it's been done in areas like civil rights. It's been done in voting rights to give women the right to vote. It's been done, unfortunately, to establish the income tax, all of which has been done by representatives in Congress, who two-thirds of them vote to amend the Constitution, and then three-fourths of the state legislatures have to approve it. So this is not something that was designed for the judiciary to just look at and say, oh, we're going to change this. We think the Second Amendment to the Constitution, for example, that gives people the right to keep and bear arms. We think that's archaic. That shouldn't be in the Constitution anymore. We're just going to take it out, and we're going to ignore it. That's not the way the system was set up. And by the way, the one troubling thing here is Kate Sunstein is one of the Obama czars, which, by the way, I think the appointment of the czars is unconstitutional, and I'm surprised nobody's challenged it. But he's one of the Obama czars, and he basically, when asked about this, the constitutionality of things like health care, he said that he thinks the Supreme Court is no longer relevant and shouldn't be allowed to decide what's constitutional and what's not. He thinks that instead that President Obama ought to be the final word on what is constitutional. Now, that if that's a trial balloon and he's floating up there, that's very scary, because that indicates that you've got people in our government who basically have decided that the Constitution is no longer relevant, and they're going to start ignoring it. And there's a lot more coming down the pike through Congress that challenges our constitutional or our constitutional rights.
Well, that bill that you just mentioned, it's called the what, Sunshine Bill?
No, this was Kate Sunstein.
Right, Sunstein. Isn't that the limiting speech bill?
No, I'm not aware of that.
Okay.
I know there are bills in Congress right now that are designed to, for example, limit talk radio.
Right. Isn't that the Sunstein bill?
No. Actually, that bill has been introduced by Dick Durbin, and it's in the Senate right now. And basically, it reestablishes the fairness doctrine and gives Sunstein, who is the regulatory czar, and gives Mark Lloyd, who is the czar for the FCC, gives them the power to regulate talk radio and decide that there are too many conservatives on talk radio, there have to be more liberals, there have to be more left-wing programs, even though people don't listen to them, and that's why the stations don't carry them, because they can't make any money off of advertising. But this is all designed to try to limit the First Amendment rights to freedom of the press. And also Mark Lloyd, by the way, who, as I said, is the so-called diversity czar, Mark Lloyd has publicly stated that he thinks that we talk too much about First Amendment rights, and that the First Amendment right of free speech and freedom of the press is really no longer relevant. And he likes the way that Hugo Chavez does things in Venezuela when it comes to the press. In other words, he likes the idea of arresting people who disagree with the government. And this is the guy that is going to have more power under this bill that's being pushed by Dick Durbin in the Senate. And by the way, there's another bill that's been introduced in the Senate by Jay Rockefeller that's making its way through. And this bill basically allows President Obama to declare a crisis, doesn't define what a crisis is, but to declare a cybersecurity crisis and to take control of the Internet.
I saw that. It was absolutely frightening. But he's a Rockefeller. I would expect it. I would expect it. This does not shock me. But it is absolutely frightening. The thing is that when you speak to the number, it's kind of like a wheel and the spokes on the wheel, and you start to look at each spoke that's coming in very quickly of all the ways in which human freedoms are being removed or eroded, the government is going to be in our biological state of affairs, our financial state of affairs, and our speaking and writing state of affairs, and controlling all access to everything. As a constitutional attorney, what can we do and what should we do that would be effective at letting people know and understand that a great deal of people in this country will not be able to deal with this?
Well, there are several things. The first thing that needs to be done, and I said this when I initially started my little blog, and I started it a few months back, and I've already had 183,000 hits on it, and it's primarily dealing with the health care issue, but other constitutional issues. And I'm right now getting about 2,000 hits a day. People are looking at this, and they're getting the word out to other people about what's really going on in this country, because it's very scary. And more people are getting involved. More and more people are contacting their members of Congress. And I think there's going to be a groundswell in a few months when we go to the polls, and I think that there's going to be a lot of changes made in Congress. I think a lot of people who voted for this unconstitutional health care bill are going to have to pay the piper, and they're going to get thrown out. That's one thing that could be done. Now, in the immediate future, I am currently working with a group called the U.S. Justice Foundation, which I had worked with when I was practicing law, actively practicing. They used to refer constitutional cases to me, and they handle constitutional issues. We're preparing a lawsuit against the health care bill to have it declared unconstitutional on a number of grounds. This is basically going to be, there are 14 states, of course, that have filed to declare it unconstitutional. They primarily are dealing with the 10th Amendment implications. This lawsuit I'm helping work on will be much broader. People need to support the groups that are going to be filing the lawsuits here because it's going to be a very expensive and time-consuming process. So that's something that people can also do. But primarily, we just need to educate ourselves of what's going on and get the word out and let people know about things like the bills that are pending in Congress to take over the Internet. Let them start contacting their representatives and put some pressure on them. And we need to encourage the main line of defense right now, and that is the states. We need to contact our state legislators and let them know that we will back them up when they do things like get the attorney, you know, pass a law like Virginia has done, basically saying, we're not going to abide by this. We're not going to force members of people in our state to buy health insurance. The federal government can't tell us to do that, and we're not going to go along with it.
What if the states are dependent on the federal government for subsidies? Then they're not going to be able to stand up from their point of view, are they?
Well, that's one of the things that the lawsuit filed by the states is about. Much of the subsidies, for example, for things like Medicaid, which is covered by the federal government at this point, is not going to be covered under this new bill. They are mandating that in a state like Florida, millions more people be put on Medicaid. People that can't afford health insurance or don't have health insurance will be put on Medicaid, and it's mandated that the states pick up the tab for this.
So, are you serious?
Yeah. So you're talking a situation. Well, that, you know, if you read the lawsuit that's been filed in the state of Florida, and it's the suit been filed by the 14 different attorney generals, they're saying this is going to bankrupt the states. We can't afford to do this. They're going to have to massively increase the taxes on individuals in their states in order to begin to pay for this. Because the federal government is just saying, we're dumping all this on you. This is part of our program, and we're going to tell you what to do. So if the states think they're bad off, they're going to be bad off now losing some subsidies, they are not really aware of what's coming down at them from the federal government.
Do you see the possibility of not only the 14 states you just mentioned, but other states coming in and saying, no, we will not participate in the terms and conditions of this health care bill?
Oh, I think it's coming. I think there's something like 38 states where they're considering bills in their state legislatures along these lines. So I think there are going to be a number of states. And I think as people and members of the state legislature start realizing the true implications of this and the fact that it's going to bankrupt the states, it's going to take away individual freedoms, it's going to take away the rights of the states to regulate the healthcare industries in their states, when they realize the massive scope of what's happening here, I think more and more members of the state legislators are going to start getting involved. And if they don't, then again, people, when they go to the polls, need to hold them accountable just like they're going to hold members of Congress accountable.
I have a question about terms and conditions. When they think of health care reform, a lot of people want everybody to be able to get care if something happens to them. And a lot of good people cannot afford insurance. For my insurance alone, a month is $500 a month, and I'm well, okay? It's a lot. So a lot of people that are working, a lot of people who have worked but are now unemployed, who can't afford insurance, the terms and conditions of this healthcare are highly punitive if what you're articulating is so. My question to you is, the terms and conditions of healthcare are the problem. Do you think that in the United States of America, that if someone needs care, that they should be denied care? Or are you disagreeing with the way that care is being made available and the terms and conditions grounding it? Could you explain it? Because I want to understand, what is your issue with people who will now have health care? Because there's a lot of people that will just tout, look, health care is now for everybody. And under that general umbrella, there's a lot of critical thinking that is not happening underneath that banner. Like, what's it going to cost? What's it about? What are the terms and conditions? What does it mean? And there's a tyrannical mandate now. There's a tyrannical law that's entering our biological lives, our electronic lives, our financial lives, our philosophical lives, our lives of speech and communication. But if we were to eliminate what President Obama has just done, if we were to say, look, that's null and void right now, but would you be interested in helping architect a way for people to get care in the United States of America if they need it but cannot afford to pay the health insurance companies? Would you be interested in that?
Well, certainly I would. And as a matter of fact, I've been involved in that in the past. And most of this is being done at the state level. And in most states, there are very good systems set up to provide people with health care, particularly in I know there in the state of Texas, for example. There are, first of all, a lot of private groups that actually have health care facilities. And people that cannot afford health care or don't have insurance can go and get health care. There's some very good clinics around where, you know, you pay $20 for a doctor's visit. And they can help people get medicine and this sort of thing. Emergency rooms, of course, treat a lot of people that need to get help. And in the state of Texas, for example, they have very good treatment that's provided. This is mandatory. They can't just turn people away and come to emergency rooms. They have to provide care for them. Part of the problem is in states like California and in certain parts of Texas, so many of the people that are coming to get health care are coming from across the border and are not citizens of the United States. They're illegals, and yet they're provided health care, too, and that is bankrupting part of the system. But the idea is that the states, with subsidies from the federal government on things like Medicaid, can provide health care to people that need it and people that can't afford to pay the insurance premiums or get the health care on their own. When, however, you take this away from the states and tell the states, you're going to do this the way the federal government wants, and you're going to pay for it, and we're going to decide what type of health care you have, and we're going to decide what type of insurance people have to have, then you start getting into, first of all, a system that's ultimately going to collapse and end up like Great Britain, where people wait and wait and wait and wait for treatment because of the shortage of doctors and nurses and facilities. Then secondly, you have a system that basically is going to trample on the individual rights of Americans. So the idea here is not that I'm opposed to fixing health care or fixing the insurance industry. What I am opposed to, though, is the federal government basically taking control of everything, and that's what this bill does.
I got it. Is there anything else in the bill that you would like to share with us that also concerns you?
Well, one of the things that was added into the bill that most people are not aware of and is not even being talked about much is that, and this has nothing whatsoever to do with health care, but they wanted to put this in because this is something else that President Obama wants. He loves to take control of various parts of our economy. In the bill, they put in sections that amount to a complete takeover of the student loan business in this country. If people want their children to go to college and they want to make a student loan, they no longer will be able to go to their bank to do it. They have to go directly to the federal government. The federal government will decide who gets student loans and will decide what terms and conditions there will be on people to get these loans.
I don't get it. How is this in the health care bill?
That's a good question. But they put it in and they passed it.
Like an attachment to it or an addendum to it, but it has nothing to do with health care.
Well, no, it's not really an addendum. It's part of the bill. It's a section towards the end of the bill. And there's other stuff in there that I'm still looking into. There's some language about some kind of reserve officer corps that I don't understand where that comes from, what they're talking about there. We're trying to figure out what this is not military, so what type of officers are going to be appointed by Obama to do what, and who are they, and, you know, what's the need for them. So there's a lot still in there that we're going through, but this business about putting in the health care bill that Obama is now going to have control of student loans in this country, and I guess they can, you know, the idea is that if the federal government controls student loans, they can decide who goes to college and decide whether or not they have to put in service to the federal government to get their student loan. So this is something else, another area where basically private industry has been taken over and by the federal government, and it's been done very quietly, but it's another area where we are going to be losing our rights.
Do the states have legal standing to stand up to the federal government?
Oh, absolutely. The states,
how do they do it?
Well, basically, the lawsuit is one of the things they can do. They can file lawsuits under the 10th Amendment. And then there's something which people talk about and the liberals try to laugh at, but it exists, it's real, and that's the nullification process. The states, when the Constitution was drawn up, the states and the people of the United States gave power to the federal government. And the power was specifically limited. It was limited in the body of the Constitution. It was further limited by the passage of the Bill of Rights. This is what the states did. Now, when the federal government decides to exceed that power and trample on the rights of the individuals in this country and trample on the right of the states to handle things within their own borders, then the states are within their rights to say, no, we're not going to do this. They're basically going to say, we're not going to abide by this law. That's what the state of Virginia has done. That's what I believe Idaho has done now in their legislatures. They said, no, the health care bill is unconstitutional. It takes away the rights of individuals in our states. It takes away our right to handle health care in our state, and it mandates us to do things that we don't want to do, and the federal government doesn't have the power to make that mandate. We're just not going to do it. And that, in effect, is nullification.
What if the federal government ignores the lawsuits, and can they?
Well, they can't ignore them. I mean, you know, they're going to be fighting them tooth and nail, and we're coming at them from a lot of different directions. And all they can do at this point is fight them in the courts, excuse me, okay, and hope they win. Now, if all or a large portion of this health care bill is declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, then the whole thing goes on the scrap heap. The only thing that the federal government can do is basically Congress would have to start all over and try to create something that is constitutional. Now,
would the Supreme Court, do you believe, will vote when push comes to shove that this bill is unconstitutional? Do you think the people will stand up in the Supreme Court and see this clearly the way you see this?
I think there's a very good chance that that will happen. Now, it'll probably be a close vote. It'll probably be a 5-4 vote, although it could, you know, there could be more votes in favor of throwing the bill out. But, of course, we have to be concerned with the fact that down the road, the makeup of the Supreme Court is going to change. You've got Kennedy, who's 89 years old, on the Supreme Court right now, and he's pretty much the swing vote. Eventually, he will retire, and when he does, Obama will be appointing someone else to Supreme Court. And that's another reason that people need to try to elect conservatives to the Senate come November and take back control of the U.S. Senate so that some far-left appointment can't be made by Obama that would change the outcome of something like suits against the health care bills.
But, Michael, isn't this really beyond left and right? Let us suppose a Republican did the same thing with a different name. You'd be opposed to it, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. You're referencing liberal and all that, but it's really not a partisan issue. It's a constitutional issue of personal freedoms.
And right, exactly. And this is something that people need to realize, and it does cross the party lines, In fact, at this point, I was a lifelong Republican. I worked with Ronald Reagan during his campaigns for president. But right now, I consider myself an independent. I'm not happy with either party. There's been too much going on in the past few years, and this goes back into the Bush administration. Too many areas where the constitutional rights of the American people are being ignored, and the government is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So when I use the phrase, liberal and conservative, the liberals are primarily the people I see that want more power to the government. Conservatives have traditionally opposed this, but there are a lot of people that would classify themselves as liberal who are getting quite concerned right now about the fact that individual liberties are being lost in this country. And so it's basically a nonpartisan issue. We're talking about the Constitution, and the Constitution wasn't set up to benefit any particular political party.
I don't want to take us off course, but I want to ask you a quick question about TSA and these airport scanners. Chertoff is on the board of directors of the company that makes all these whole-body scanners at the airports that they're looking to put in around America and around the world. Are they constitutional? Whole body scanners in the airport. I have to be radiated to fly. I am so upset about this. This is so terrible, the exposure to radiation for people who fly. And I wondered, on a constitutional level, what's your perspective on this?
Well, from a constitutional, strictly a constitutional standpoint,
yes,
it probably is constitutional. And the reason being is because people have choices. They don't have to fly. As long as people have a choice that they can avoid the airport, they don't have to fly if they don't want to, and it would probably be held to be constitutional. That doesn't mean I agree with it. It doesn't mean that I like the idea of the full body scanners, because I think that they can possibly pose a health threat. But from a standpoint of if it went to the Supreme Court, how they would decide it, I think they would probably decide that it's constitutional.
Even if it impairs the health of the people that go through them? We know this from radiation. I mean, we even know this from flying.
Well, if that could be proved, then it would be a different situation. The Supreme Court would have to look at the individual rights of people to maintain their health as opposed to the rights of the airlines and the government to have increased security in airports. So, again, this is something that if the Supreme Court looked at it from that standpoint, that if it does impair your health, then they very well could strike it down as being unconstitutional, as an infringement on the individual's right to maintain their health and healthy environment.
I don't mind being frisked or checked physically. That's not the issue. Do you think that I have a right when I go through an airport and I'm traveling a lot to ask them to frisk me rather than to go through these scanners?
I would think you should have that right, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to find out. I'm actually going to call TSA and Homeland Security and find out if that's an option.
I think that's
an important option. It's not like somebody's not willing to be checked, but they don't want to be radiated.
Right. I think you should have that right, yes.
So you are doing a lot of teaching in evidence law, constitutional law, courtroom strategy, and business law for education to go, an online company providing courses for numerous universities. What else are you doing now? You have your own radio show that you host?
I do. As a matter of fact, it's on later today. It's on at 3 o'clock Central Time, and it originates it's on the Internet. It originates out of Sandy Springs, Georgia, which is right outside of Atlanta. And I'm doing it. It's called Our Constitution. And if people go to my blog, and they can find access to the link to the radio show, because all the shows are archived, so they can listen to them anytime they want to. In addition, I'm also doing another show about once a month. I'm a guest on the Tea Party Radio, which is out of California. And the excerpts from that show are also archived on that website, and are actually they're putting the excerpts from that show that I'm doing, they're putting that on YouTube also.
Why is the Tea Party getting such a bad rap on the traditional channels for television?
Well, it's because media, particularly the media that supports big government, they're scared to death of the Tea Party people. Because this is a movement. This is not a new political party. This is a grassroots movement that has appeared really out of nowhere by people who are very angry. You've got people of all races and all backgrounds. You've got people who consider themselves on the left and people consider themselves on the right. They're all united doing one thing, and that is telling the federal government, get off our backs. We don't want you trampling on our constitutional rights. And that type of upheaval is something that hasn't occurred in this country for a long time. And so the Tea Party groups are going to be under constant attack by the far left and by the people in the media who basically see the whole philosophy that they have is that you and I and all of us and the great unwashed masses out in the United States, we're too stupid to know what's good for us. That only your elites, only your people that in the national news networks, only your people in Congress, your government bureaucrats, the President of the United States, they are the ones that should be making our decisions for us. We're too dumb to make decisions for ourselves. And that's why they push the philosophy of a big government, a nanny government. You know, President Obama, I see him as wanting to be the nanny in chief. And so that, you know, every aspect of our lives will be controlled. They're looking at an uprising among Americans, and they call it the Tea Party, and they could call it whatever they want, but it's an uprising among Americans who are saying, we don't buy into that. We are not dumb. We do know what's happening to us. We don't want a nanny government. We don't want the federal government taking control of our lives. We want to continue to be free people. And that's why it's so scary to the elites, what I call the elites.
What is your constitutional take on forced vaccinations or mandatory vaccinations?
Really, that's something that I haven't really looked into. But the mandatory vaccinations, again, I think that that's a situation where individuals should be able to make the choice for themselves. I don't think that the federal government should be able to mandate something like that. Though that's more or less a libertarian take on it, but being the way I am and being for individual rights, I think that forced vaccinations would probably is a violation of the Constitution, particularly when you deal with a situation, and this is something interesting that comes back to the health care bill, too, is if people have religious objections to something like that, those should be upheld. And it's interesting that in the health care bill, one religious group is excluded from it. That's the Amish. But no other religious groups are.
That's interesting.
That violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. I think if people have religious objections to buying health insurance, religious objections to vaccinations, that they ought to be able to opt out and not be forced to do that.
You're going to be needed on so many fronts to do more and more teaching and illuminating to the public what they need to be thinking about and standing for. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to Michael Connelly, who has been practicing constitutional law for 27 years. He's teaching and writing about it. You can reach him at www.michaelconnelly.viviti.com. Michael, how do people reach you? Is there an email or is there a contact number?
On my blog site, they can find my contact information.
Okay.
They can find my email. They can find an address if they want to write to me. There's the contact information is there on the blog.
I really appreciate your time and participation today, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
I'd be glad to, Kim. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Michael.